Good afternoon. I'm happy you're strong enough to stay for the last session for today. I hope you'll be able to do the same thing tomorrow. I'm Peter Himschoot. I work as a trainer and architect for UTU, a Belgium training company. And Microsoft asked me to speak on WCF4. I'm also a Microsoft regional director, which has a very nice name to it, but which basically means I'm an evangelist. For Microsoft. Okay, so what's new in WCF4? So this is not a session on what's WCF4, it's just about the new stuff. What Microsoft did is they got a lot of complaints about, well, people were saying doing WCF is easy until I reach the config file. Right? The moment you start to have to do configuration, you're like, ugh. So they made that easier. So they did a lot for making it a lot easier to work with configuration. What they've also done is to make working with your endpoints, I mean the address, the URIs, a little bit cleaner. So your endpoint actually does not have to have an SVC in it anymore if you don't want that. And if you want to deploy a service, you don't have to deploy the .svc file anymore. So for that, they've done things as well. They've also done stuff for routing. Anybody here ever have to build their own routing service? No? Okay. So then you didn't do work for nothing because now it's part of that. They also now have implemented something called WS Discovery, which is really saying, give me any service out there that complies with whatever I want it to be. And then finally, we'll have a look at REST and also a short look at Workflow Foundation 4 because that allows us to write WCF services without a single line of code. It's actually a complete rewrite of Workflow Foundation, and it's really, really better. Well, I find that anyway. Okay, so configuration in WCF is complicated. So what they did is, well, they made it now possible to build a service with no configuration at all, if you want to. It's just going to go back to a whole bunch of defaults. By the way, that's a very important thing to have if you also want to use App Fabric, also known as Dublin. I'll give you a very short taste of App Fabric, formerly known as Dublin. Yeah, you have App Fabric for Azure. You have App Fabric for WCF. I asked somebody yesterday at Microsoft, why these two names? Well, that's just to confuse the enemy, he said. So it also confuses me. Am I the enemy? No, actually, if you think about it, they're probably going to make Dublin, App Fabric for Azure and App Fabric for Dublin is going to be the same thing in the future. Okay. So how is it easier to build services? Well, now you just get default endpoints. If you build a service and you do not put endpoints in your configuration, WCF will add some for you. Actually, for each contract, it will add an endpoint for each base address. How does it do that? Well, there's a new method. It's called add default endpoints, which simply adds the defaults. So you can call it yourself if you want to. So let's have a quick look at that. So let's go to my Visual Studio. Come on. Here I have a very simple WCF service. To be honest, there's a simple contract, ifoo ibar, with two methods. A simple implementation, which really does nothing useful at all, and then the service. Now, what I'm doing here is I'm hosting it, and I have there two base addresses. I have an HTTP and a NetTCP base address. What I'm also doing here is I'm going to call host.open, and as you can see here, there's no config file. No config file. So what will happen, when you call host.open, it will call add default endpoints for me. The moment you add a single endpoint, it doesn't do that anymore. And what I then do is I just dump out all the endpoints I have. So if I run this little sample, you'll see I will get four endpoints. Why four? Two base addresses, two contracts, 2x2 is 4. What I can also do is I could manually add my own new endpoint. One moment, let's kill this. So what I can say here, host.and I can just say add service endpoint, and then I can just do the usual stuff. I give it my contract, And for example, a binding, what shall I take? WSHTTP binding, and I'll give an endpoint here, let's call that, well, secure. Oops, I forgot a bracket, I think. No, I didn't. So what will happen if I run this one? Well, the host.open is going to see there's already one endpoint, so it says, okay, I don't need to do anything at all, so it doesn't add its own endpoints. Like I said, if you want to, you can do that yourself. So what you can still do is to say host, I really like those default endpoints. So if I add this method, I now get 5. Now, basically, this comes down to, hey, you don't have to have endpoints. As long as you specify the base addresses in your service, it's going to be fine. Which is, of course, quite nice to do if you build it yourself, if you build your host yourself. But what if you do this in IIS? Well, I'll show you in a moment. You can change a couple of things there as well. Okay. Now, what I show you is default endpoints. And I said base address is HTTP. And I said base address is NetTCP. Now, if it's NetTCP, selecting the binding is easy. There's just NetTCP binding. But what if you select HTTP binding? Then you can select between basic, WS, WS 2007, and a whole bunch of others, web HTTP binding. So what they also do is they have a default mapping between the protocol and the binding. And you can change that yourself. So if you don't want to see the default binding, whatever that is, you want to configure that, you can just say, hey, I want to add my own protocol bindings. By the way, you can do this at the machine level, at the IIS site level, and at the application level. So you can just take your pick. It's quite easy. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to add my own protocol mapping. And the way you have to do that is you remove the default, HTTP, and then you add here, for example, the scheme HTTP using WS HTTP binding. If you want to, you can then also change other things like message encoding. Let's have a look at that. I'm going to continue with what I have here, and I'm going to add a new configuration file. So, general application configuration file, add. Yeah. In case you're wondering, they still haven't fixed a particular little nuisance. If you have a web.config, you can actually make Visual Studio open up the WCF configuration editor for you from this. But you still have to go to Tools, run the WCF configuration editor. Visual Studio, have you seen it? And then you can close this back again, and then, ta-da, still there. I still don't know why it works this way. There's nothing new in my app.config, so I can now just open it. One of the things I can do here is I can go to advanced, and I'm terribly sorry, you still cannot change the font here as far as I know. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to add a new protocol mapping. Sorry. So as you can see, here you get the defaults. These come from machine.config. So for basic, for HTTP, we get basic HTTP binding. NetMSMQ, well, the rest is quite obvious. So what I can do here is I can click on this thing and hit edit. And then I will get this window saying, what do you want? Well, I would rather have WS HTTP binding. Voila. So if I'm now going to run my demo again, well, let's save this first. If I'm going to run my demo again, you'll see that it has added this stuff now. And now I have everywhere, instead of basic HTTP binding, WS HTTP binding. Now you might say, okay, but I don't like text encoding. I want to have message encoding for MTOM. You can do that too. So you just go back here. And you just do the usual stuff. So you go here for a binding. Would like to add a new binding configuration, WS HTTP. Hit OK. Let's have a look here. Message encoding, text. Let's change that to MTOM. Let's give that a nice name. Peters HTTP WS. Oh. binding, and then just go back here to my protocol mappings, go back here, edit, and then just select my binding configuration. Hit OK again, save, and back to Visual Studio, and run it again. And now you see that it's actually using NPM. Yeah, by the way, the way my stuff works, if it finds an endpoint that uses WSHTTP binding, it makes it into MTOM. By the way, don't see anything special? I have three, and the first one is still using text. Well, I said that I wanted to have an endpoint at that address with that WSHTTP binding with my settings. That's because I added this encoder. We'll solve that in a second. So, more default stuff. So, I can make it add for me default endpoints. I can make it choose my binding the way I want. What I can also do is I can change the default binding configuration. So, I can say anybody who's using WSHTTP, I want you to use my WSHTTP binding and not the one you have. So I can change that. Now, if you think about that, how would you do that? Normally, if you add a WSHTTP binding, you have to give it a name. And then you have to refer back to that from within your endpoint. So what I said, hey, if you don't have a name, that would be a nice way to have the default. So if you want to have a WSHTTP binding configuration, just drop the name. So if I want to do that, I can just say I want to have a binding with no name, and that's a default. So if I want to do that again, what I do is I just go back here. I go to my binding, and I remove my nice name. And of course, since I'm using the default binding configuration, I'm also going to remove this one. Save again, run again. And now, oops, that's not good. Everybody should be using MTOM. Am I doing something wrong? I think I'm doing something wrong. Okay. But this way, you can simply say, everybody who's using WSHTTP binding, you need to use MTOM. Nice and easy. Okay. Now, what else can we make default? Binding. What else do you want to have for default? Behavior, of course. So what you might want to do is to say, all my services on this server, I want everybody to have metadata. If you want to do that with Windows Communication Foundation 3, you have to give each endpoint that behavior. Now, you can simply say all endpoints should behave that way. So if you want to have a default behavior, how does it work? Guess, exactly the same way as before. So you just add a behavior, no name, and everybody gets that by default. To be honest, that's even so simple, I'm not going to show you that. Okay. Now, next thing, who uses Max? The iMetadata Exchange interface endpoint. Don't you love typing that in? So Microsoft said, hey, you know what? Let's give people special default endpoints. We're going to call them standard endpoints. So if you want to have an endpoint for Max, you can just add a Max endpoint. And that one will automatically look at your protocol, at your binding, and then, well, work for that one. And we'll add a whole bunch of others. We're going to add special endpoints, for example, to enable discovery. I'll talk about discovery a little bit later, but you can simply say, I need a discovery endpoint, and you figure it out how. And then if you're going to work with workflow, what we now can do is, like, we can start and stop workflows simply using services. So they have a special endpoint, which is called workflow control endpoint, to allow you to start and stop services. It just means there's a lot less for us to do. The only thing you have to do is you have to say, I want an endpoint of this kind. That's all. So if you want to have, like, metadata, you just add an endpoint, kind of, Max endpoint, and of course, we need to add a little address. So, if you want to then change standard endpoints itself, you can add your own, or you can change them. You can say, hey, I want to have UDP discovery, but I want to have a special endpoint for that discovery. So again, you do that simply by using an endpoint configuration like there. So you have an endpoint of kind, and then you have an endpoint configuration with the standard endpoint, just like that. Yeah. Okay. Let's try that one on my demo. So here, for the moment, I don't have metadata yet. So if I run this, I could go to this site and then see if I have metadata, but I won't get any metadata. Yeah. So if I use the browser, paste, enter, it says, sorry, no metadata. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a default behavior. I need to do that. So let's go here, endpoint behavior, service behavior, add a new behavior. I'm going to give this no name, and I'm going to add, where's the debug one? I like that one, and I like to have my metadata. Let's change a couple of properties, HTTP GET, yes please, and then debugging, yes please. So I can just make this the default behavior. And what I can now do is I can go to my service and create a new endpoint. So let's have my service, browse for it. Whoops. Oh, yeah. That's a typical problem on my machine. I screwed up my machine. I'll talk about this a little bit later. So let's try this one. Did I save it? Okay, so let's add a service. Thank God for IntelliSense. So I can have a service. Name equal, and what did I call my service? The namespace. I never can remember my namespaces. Thank God for copy-paste. Okay. So I'm going to have this service, and I'm going to give it an endpoint. And I'm going to say kind is, and then I can say max endpoint, like this. Now, I just added a max endpoint, and I forgot something. What should I do? Add an address like max. Okay, so now if I run my service, you'll see, first of all, that I have a max endpoint, and I also have metadata over HTTP if I want. So I have, like, everything. You can see metadata exchange HTTP binding. I didn't need to mention that. So if I change my binding to use NetTCP, it will take that. Okay. What else? Well, if you start combining all this stuff, it actually means we can go back in time. We can go back when we wrote ESMX web services. How would you build an ESMX web service? We just could take a file, call it ESMX, put your code in there, web method on it, and you would have everything. If you want to, you can build that one too. So what you could do here is simply build a service, and just put there the name of the class, and then simply write the class inside your code itself, and then just expose it as a service without any special web.config. So just to show you, what I can do here is go to another project. Well, to be honest, I was thinking, should I build most of my demos live again? Well, it's just the last session for today. Everybody's tired. Let's not bore them too much with those things. So what I did is I just built a simple WCF service. I threw away my service contract, iService. I threw away the implementation, iService. I took the file and I renamed it Hello Service, and I put this stuff in there. So I just have a class here, Hello Service, with a method, greeting. And I said, I want you to expose this as a service. I slapped on service contract, operation contract, And that's it. And now I have a service. And if you don't believe me, web.config, well, actually, I'm cheating a little bit because there is still stuff in here. But let's make that maybe a little bit easier. I'm going to remove this thing. Now, actually, when you build a new service, this is what you get now in .NET 4 automatically. A default behavior. Enable metadata and having the debug behavior. Debugging behavior. Now, so that makes it easier for us to build services. So if I want to, I can just now view this in the browser and I get a real service. I can actually call it for you if you want. No. So, but you know how this works, right? So I'm just going to use this tool, create my service, make it fetch metadata, call greeting. Again, I'm sorry about the font size. But if I hit invoke here, you see my greeting. So if you really want to be a diehard, make it very easy as possible, developer, you can build services literally this way. Anybody want to do that? But you can. That's the option.
Is it WS compliant?
Is it WS compliant? Well, I can make this use WS HTTP binding if that's what you mean. Yeah, sure. What I need to do then is I need to give it a default. I need to make HTTP use WS HTTP binding by default. The easiest way to do that is put a web.config somewhere along the path until machine.config. Okay. By the way, Microsoft did two things then to make it easier for building services like this. First of all, if you want to deploy your service to IIS, what you need to do is you need to deploy your code and the .svc file. And they said, okay, let's make it easier. If you want to, you can deploy without .svc file. Or your .svc file does not have to have the same name as the address people are going to be visiting. So if you want to do that, you can add a service activation endpoint. And then you can say, hey, this is the address I want to use, helloworld.svc. And I want you to use this service. Actually, there's one big pity. Last year, you could actually drop the .svc from that address as well. Now you can't. So they say you have to have .svc. If you want to have it without the .svc in the address, what you do is you just use ASP.NET routing, and I'll show you a little bit later. But if I want to, I can do that. Why no .svc? Who is using REST? Whoa. Only that much? Who knows about REST? Okay. Who doesn't like REST? Nobody? Okay. A little bit. I love REST. Sorry. Okay. Let's have a look at this. By the way, if you really want to, what you can do, and like I said, I'm going to show you an example. You can just use the ASP.NET routing and just add the HTTP module for the routing, and then simply say, hey, I want you to go, when you use this address, I want you to go to this .svc file for me. So, if you don't want to have the .svc, what I'm going to do is, for this service, instead of browsing here to helloservice.svc, is to make it use another. So I'm going to go to web.config. Not there anymore. Please, Microsoft, give me this by default. So what I was going to do here is I'm going to go here for the hosting environment, and in there you can find the service activations. Again, let's zoom in a bit. So what you can do here is to give it three things. I'm only going to give it two, but I can give it a new service activation. Again, zoom in. So I'm going to use dada.svc, and then I'm going to make it use my hello world service. It's hello service. I just noticed that right on the top right there, that is called hello service. So if I take this,
save my config, and run again, and view in browser. I can also ask it, give me Dada. And it also works. This is really two addresses pointing to the same service. And if you're going to look in your config file, you'll see this new section here, here, where you can say, I want you to host my service, dada.svc, and make it move to Hello World. Okay. So again, all of this stuff was easy, I think. Well, most of the stuff you saw is you have to config less. You have to build less, which is always a good thing. Let's talk a little bit about routing. So if you want to, you can also add routing to your service. Why is it so interesting to have routing? Well, it's a way to decouple your clients from your actual service. It's a way to add additional stuff. You could have a routing service that also does logging for you and so on and so on. So Microsoft decided to just add for us a routing service. And it's quite easy. If you want to use a routing service, you just deploy it just like any other routing service. And the only thing you need to do here is to use this class as your routing service. Well, what you also need to do, of course, is to give it endpoints. So here, you also need to give it endpoints and then tell it what kind of routing you want to do. And then you also need to give it a routing table. I'll show you in a moment. And then, of course, you have to give it the client address where to go to. So really, routing actually is simple, but for this example, when I said simplified configuration, this adds like two pages of configuration. You'll see in a moment. So if you want to do that, what you also need to do in your configuration is to have a routing table, this thing here. And then in that routing table, what you also need to do is to give it a list of addresses, client addresses, this thing. So that's actually saying, well, I have a service over there, over there, over there. And then finally, we come to the routing table. And this is really where the fun starts. What you need to do in that routing table is to give it a endpoint, go here, and then you have to give it a filter. And this filter will actually determine whether to go to that service. Now these are really old-fashioned. The word is escaping me. It will come back to me. These are really the filters that are already part of WCF. So if you've ever looked inside WCF. You see that for each endpoint, it makes a whole channel. And in that channel, there are like filters that says, if the message has action like this, give it there. You can build here your own filters to do, for example, content-based routing. By the way, there is already support for that. So one of the filters you get is an XPath filter saying, if in the message you find this kind of XPath, then give it to me. And it can combine filters and so on. But let's give a simple example of the routing. This example, which I'm going to show you, is part of the WCF samples. So if you install .NET 4, you can download this sample together with a bunch of others. And this is really the simple sample of them all, if it wants to load. Okay, let me show you what I have. I have a simple client, and this client will simply talk to my service. It will simply talk, but it will actually talk to a routing service address. So the address in here is really going to the router. And the router itself is really a service which hosts the routing service. And then in the configuration, you can find a little bit of stuff. Let's go here for the configuration. What you'll find here is that it has an endpoint which exposes iRequest reply router. The iRequest reply router is actually the one that simply says request reply. But there are also others.
there's a very complex interface in the routing service which allows you to actually do the callback mechanism, the duplex mechanism of WCF. But if you want to use that one, be prepared. You have to build your service so it's completely asynchronous. You have to do the iasync pattern implementation of a service, which is, not for the shy people. You have to be, you have to really want to do that. Okay, so I'm just using this one, the request reply router, the simple version. And what you'll find here is that this service also has the routing behavior, and it points to this routing table. And then the routing table is this stuff, and it actually contains a client table, a list of clients, a list of filters, and then a matching between one and the other. So what you can do here is you can add as many filters as you want, and then decide whether to go to one or another service. Now this one is the one that matches everything. It says, give me all. Sorry? Yes. So this is really a service which is going to listen, and it's actually going to redirect me back to this one. This would be nice for testing, but in real life, you want to have a bunch of filters here saying, for this, go there, for that, go there, for this, go there. And it's really not that hard. You just want to add here, what you can do here, come on. Whoa. Yeah. It was trying to check it out of our source control system. What you can do here is to, give another one, foo, and then you can give it the filter type. And as you can see here, here's the list of all the filters you can take. So you can have a filter for a SOAP action. You can have a filter which will match a certain X path. So if my message has this argument with that value, you can give it for a certain endpoint name and so on. And you can combine them too. So you can say this filter and that filter. Okay. So that's routing. So if I run this thing, it will start three services. Well, two services and, whoa, great. It looks like I messed something up in my config. Yeah, sure, Peter. I messed this one up once more. So this is the client. Now, this is the service, and this is the router. Now, you have to be a bit patient. If I hit enter, my client is now going to talk to the router. The router is going to do all a little bit of work, and then it's going to redirect to this service. The first time, this takes a while, but the second time, if I do that again, it's like instant. So that's really routing. The base message here is, if you want to have a router, you have to do almost nothing. Worst case, you have to build your own message filter. That's the worst case scenario. And then, what's even better? My client still needs to know where it needs to send the message. What's even better is building a client that doesn't have to know where to send the message. So for that, there's some standard called WS Discovery. WS Discovery is a method in which a service can actually say, I'm here and I can do this. And then a client can say, I need somebody who can do this. It's kind of the replacement for UDDI, because that was really what was the idea of it. So if you want to just have a service and a client talking to one another without them having to know each other, we can use WS Discovery. Basically, it's easy. When a service starts, it says hello, for example, to a WS Discovery service out there. This is the managed version. This is the most complex version. So you have a kind of UDDI directory service out there. It has nothing to do with UDDI. But if you remember UDDI, it's similar. So here you're simply saying, I'm a service and I can do this. Hello. And then a client says, I need somebody who can do something for me. And it sends criteria to the discovery service. Discovery service says, hey, you, can you do that for me? And they can all say yes or no. And then I can actually get back from the client an endpoint to talk to one of these things. And then later, the service can say bye, I'm going to go away, and then the client can use that.
You have all kind of different versions of this thing, from very simple to very complex. The one I'm going to show you is the very simple one, which is the ad hoc discovery, which works on the internet. It actually uses UDP to broadcast to everybody, I'm there. And then clients can actually say, I need somebody who can do that over UDP. And then the managed version, which is the previous slide, is about building a discovery service, deploying that on the intranet, or internet, and then making client and services talk to this one too. Okay. Let me show you how easy it is to build your own discovery. So, what I have here is, well, again, a very simple calculator service, which does nothing at all. Nothing, well, truly useful. Adding numbers together as a service. And then I have here the service itself. So what does the service do? It has its base address. It has its service host. And then here, I just add a endpoint for WSHTTP binding, a regular endpoint. And then here, I add a service endpoint, UDP discovery endpoint. This would be one of the standard endpoints you can add in configuration. You can simply say endpoint kind UDP discovery. When you do that, this endpoint together with this behavior will work together to implement dynamic endpoints. So if I run this, debug. Yeah, working with these big fonts is a lot of fun. So this will simply start. And then the client, if you look at the cooler in the client, the only thing it does, it says, give me a dynamic endpoint. So it says, I need a dynamic endpoint for somebody who has the iCalculator service contract over HTTP binding, give me an endpoint. So this one will then look for anybody who has that. Right? So with some luck, it will find my service. Of course, there's always possibility that my service is not live, and then I will get nothing. If I get something, I can just call this and then use it. So let's use this one. Come on. So this one is now actually looking for anybody can do this for me, anybody who has a calculator for me over UDP on the internet. And then it found one. So as you can see, the communication in the beginning is a little bit lengthy because they need to find each other. But then, again, you can try this. From then on, you have an efficient endpoint. Okay. And then the REST. So, people who are not familiar with REST, very short introduction. REST is a way of building services really using the HTTP protocol. Put, get, post, and delete, and other verbs if you want. The main advantage is anybody can talk REST. As long as you have something to talk HTTP, you can talk REST. Now, a couple of things are harder in REST. The first thing in REST is there's actually no support for any kind of WSDL. There's no metadata, self-describing services out there yet. There are attempts at standards, but there's none yet. So what we really need to do is we actually have to give the developer who wants to use a REST service some help. And the way we can do that is we can now in WCF4 slap on a couple of attributes to explain to anybody who wants to use the service, I can do this for you. And this is the way your method needs to look like. Now, this used to be a little bit hard. What I can now do is simply add an attribute, and then WCF will do the rest. Well, actually, I would be lying. You have to do two things. You have to add a description attribute with a little bit of help, saying, this is what I can do for you. And then you have to add on your endpoint, on the web HTTP endpoint, you have to say, enable help. That's off by default for backward compatibility, but that's it. And then you get help pages. Of course, you can use the web service host, which has a similar property now. What you can also do is to enable REST caching. That's more interesting, because REST has the GET verb. The GET verb is really the stuff when you use your browser and go and fetch a page. It's GET. So it's really give me stuff to read. So what you can then say, I want you to cache this stuff for the next half hour. Now, anybody who's been using the REST toolkit, that was actually part of REST. What they've done in WCF4 is to just use the default output caching from ASP.NET. So if you want to use a REST service and you say the output from this method, you can keep it for the next half hour. Anybody who wants to get this again, please, IS, just give them this too. Give them this, ASP.NET. You can just use a profile. So what you do is you just create an output cache profile. You say, hey, this is the name. I'm going to keep it for 60 seconds and vary by param format and accept. Watch out. The accept is important because that's the way REST can actually detect what you want. And they've also made that easier, by the way. In WCF4, it's easier to say, I would like to get something using JSON. I would like to get something using plain old XML. And then the service can say, oh, you want to have it like that, and then I'll give it to you like that. And then on your method, you just mention the ASP.NET cache profile. That's it. Let's try that in the next service. So, yeah, as you can see, I really like the jump list feature from Windows 7. Let's take this. This is actually a demo of my service, a very simple service, Echo, with here the service contract. And the thing I'm doing here is I'm adding a description. Then if I run this, it's actually going to listen here at this address. So I can now use the browser, HTTP localhost port 8000. And if I use that, I'll first get this. Now, it says, sorry, couldn't find an endpoint, but I can give you some help if you want. And then the first thing you get here on this help, it's saying, hey, I have 2 minutes for you. If you use the URI echo with get, or URI echo with post, and you use this verb, I can do this kind of stuff for you. And if you want to learn more, you can actually ask it, show me what I need to do with this get. So it then gives you an example of a response. Come on. Okay, so here you see an example of the response. Maybe zoom out a little bit. And you can see it's really a simple string. If you want to get it as JSON, you will see it like this. If I go back here to the post, come on. You can see that I can send it a request using XML or JSON. And again, with examples, a string like this. Now, I have another example, which is really the one that does the caching stuff. So what I have here in web.config is an output cache profile. And this will cache stuff for 60 seconds. What I also have done here is I have a URL routing module. This is really the ASP.NET URL routing. And you have to add a configuration like this. So I need to add this module and this handler. Okay, then on the service itself, I can just put here a cache profile. So if I'm going to get a list of customers, I will get that list, but for the next 60 seconds, it's not going to actually call my caller. It's just going to give the result from the last minute. Okay, so if I call this method, it will always give me the same stuff back. By the way, I also promised you to show you how you can add a service so you don't need to add stuff like .svc. So if I use this with REST, I can use an endpoint which is really going to go to customers, my URI /customers, and it will call this REST service. So I won't have a .svc anymore in my address. What you also see here, if I use this, if I talk to the service, I'm really using this URI. Let's try it again. Let's try this thing here. I'm going to start the service. Come on, debug.
Simple service. And I'm going to start my client. And if I start this client, it's actually going to ask it, it's actually going to add a couple of customers, and then it's going to ask it a list of customers with a get. Then it's going to delete the customer, and then it's actually going to ask it for the list of customers again. And the first minute, you will actually get two customers, although one of them has been deleted. That's because of the ASP.NET caching. Now, after 1 minute, the server will invalidate its cache, and then I will simply get one if I call it again. Yeah, so this is the silent minute. Sorry? Sing a song. No, you don't want me to do that. You don't want to see me dance either. I don't want you to see me dancing. Okay, but this should be... I'll just keep this in the background and... Sorry? Can you indicate from your application that the cache is dirty? It's really ASP.NET caching mechanism, so to be honest, I would have to double check how you do that again, but it should be possible. ASP.NET, sorry. Okay. Now, actually, I have like half an hour left, but I want to talk a little bit about workflow 4. Not to really talk about workflow 4, but it does add a couple of really interesting things for building services. This is really an important bit of building services. Anybody who's been working with workflow 3? Some of you, yeah. Actually, one of the biggest problems with workflow 3, and workflow 4 is a complete new rewrite of workflow 3, is that you would actually see a lot of people writing code inside their workflows. And Microsoft decided, no. Actually, that's not the way you want to do it. What you want to do is you want to make your workflow really a file, a text file, XAML text file. Why is that important? Well, for example, in Azure, not for the moment yet, as far as I know, but Microsoft... when they showed us Azure the first time, you could actually upload a workflow 3 workflow in the cloud and it would execute. And then later they decided, let's not do that. Let's make it workflow 4. But that's not live yet. So what I can do then is I can build a workflow, test it at home, and then just upload the string to Microsoft, a string which is actually coder. Actually, the XAML is the executable coder for my workflow. And that's really powerful. Of course, that means that you will be limited to the number of things you can do, but with workflow 4, you can do a lot just with those kind of strings. You can already do a lot. Now, what is also done is they added something called App Fabric. App Fabric rings a bell with people who use Azure, but it's also kind of, an integration with IIS of building workflows. And one of the things you really want to see is how many workflows are still busy, how many workflows are waiting, how many workflows are in trouble. So Dublin integrates with that, but it's also cool for services. Anybody ever built a durable WCF service? Nobody? In WCF 3? One of the things which were already quite cool in WCF 3 is you could build a service which, when it would be waiting for something, that it would write itself to disk, to database. It would actually write itself to the workflow database because that would have persistence in there. And that would mean that in a day you could actually shut down a server and then restart it again, and then all the services that would get requests could just continue on their merry way. They've also done that with workflow 4 and made it easier to install and work with that. So what I want to show you is to give you a quick overview of what it means to build a workflow service. I'm not going to build it live. Now, that would take a little bit too much time. But I'm just going to give you a couple of the key points. And I'm going to deploy it then and then run it. And then I'm going to shut down IIS, IIS reset. And then I'm going to continue, just as if nothing happened. People who know Bistock, you know that Bistock has that for you. But now we can build WCF services that have that same ability quite easily. So workflow and Dublin, that's what I want to show you now. So how does that integrate with WCF, by the way? Well, I can build a workflow by creating a XAMLX service. So instead of having .svc, now we can build a service which ends with .xamlx. This actually is the better that you can change the, that you don't have to have the XAMLX anymore. And what you do is you just put a XAMLX and a web.config, you put it in IIS, and it will execute if it has .NET 4. If you put it in IIS in an app domain, which is .NET 4. Okay? So let me just show you a couple of these things. What I'm going to do here is open up this thing. This is really a graphical service. You might think, huh? This is really a service which says, I'm a service and I'm going to wait for a certain request message to come in. And this request message actually here is simply a string. So my data contract here is really a string. Now you might wonder, how can I then define the contract? Well, if you go here and you go to the property view, you can actually tell it that you want this receive. You want to have this display name, but there's actually going to be a receive which is going to be called begin. The operation name is really begin, and then the service contract name is this thing. It's really a URI, but encoded in a special way. And then what I can then do is, after I get the player, I'm going to create a special object. And what you get then is a way of specifying variables with Workflow 4. Now you really get that in here as designer, and then you can just create any kind of variable that is available to .NET. For example, player, which is the stuff which I'm getting here, a number, and then something called guess. Guess what? Guess is a data contract. A data contract I built myself. So this is really a simple data contract. Now you might be saying, Peter, you just told us you're going to do this without Coda. I can do this without Coda, but it's always cleaner to use a separate data contract. So in real life, I would have this as a separate project, my data contracts, and make it easier to upgrade my workflows. So you can specify variables in here, and then you can assign them. So you get things like assign, and then I can really send a reply. So if I want to build a very simple add numbers together service, I can just build a service with a request which takes two numbers and then sends back a response which is another number. What you also find here is this new workflow model which allows you to create flow charts to flow with your business. So I'm actually saying in the beginning I'm going to wait for this, and then after sending I'm going to wait for another message. I'm going to wait for a receive of a guess. This is really a number guessing game. Guess a number between 0 and 100. And then if the user gets it, I'm going to send congratulations. Otherwise, I'm going to say try bigger or try smaller. That's really what I'm doing here. A very simple service. Now, I can just build this live, and then I can run it. And let's simply do right-click, view in browser. What do you think will happen? Well, it's actually going to execute the service, and it's going to get metadata. Why? Well, when you create a workflow service, it automatically gets a default behavior with metadata enabled. But all the rest, the contracts and so on, are all built live at runtime. So that's what workflow does for me. Now, I can take this, and I can just use my tool here. Whoops, not this one. This one. And then use it to talk to the service. So I can simply do begin here, and I can say, hey, okay, I need somebody's name. Rob? Okay. So let's zoom out again. I'm going to invoke this. It's actually going to start my service with Rob, and it says, Rob, guess a number between 0 and 100. Okay, you cannot read the whole string here. So I'm then going to do the next thing. I'm going to have a guess here.
And then I'm going to say I need an object of this type. The name is Rob, and then the number? 5? 35? Ah, 50, okay. Yeah, for the English-speaking people, that was 50. Yeah, this is recorded, so... Okay, so it says, too large, try smaller. And then to save a little bit of time, 25, too small, try higher, 37, too small, 45. Ah, okay, so I guessed it. So I can build a service this way, completely declaratively. Now, you might wonder, what's the thing? I could have built this in C# quite easy. That's true. But still, this, imagine a business process, this would be a lot more readable to business users than plain old code, right? Of course, if you really want to annoy the hell out of them, what you can do is you can open it with this, and then you get pure XAML. Of course, this is not readable to anybody, not even to developers. Okay. Anybody who's been doing WPF knows the XAML probably quite well now, but still, you get all this weird stuff you have to do in here. Now, please note, what I have currently is a service that can play a simple one game. But what if I want to have a service that can play 50 games? Or to put it in business terms, you want to have a service that can handle 50 orders at the same time. What I'm going to need is a service that can get requests in and then knows for who it is. Of course, you could do that with sessions, but we all know that sessions are not that great for scalability and other stuff. So what I could do is I could add correlation. What I'm actually going to do is I'm going to say every message you're going to send me needs to have the name of the player. And if it's Rob, I'm going to play Rob's game. And if it's Jan, I'm going to play Jan's game. And if it's, I'm going to play that game. Now, this does mean that I need to add correlation. Now, doing correlation yourself, well, what you would need to do is you would actually have to, whenever you receive a message, would have to look up the identifier, the player name, then go to a database, load all the data you've accumulated into memory, do some stuff, save that back to disk, and then, well, wait for the next request. Now, Webflow does that for you. If I want to, I can quite easily build my own little service here. And I'm going to open it up again with the designer. What I can also do here is when I send a message, I can tell it to correlate over the player's name. And the way you do that is by creating something called the correlation handle. People who've done BizTalk will see, it looks a lot like... I'm just going to say, in the message, when you send the message, I want you to store in here this bit of the message, the player name. And then when you're waiting for the next message, I want you to wait here for a message that also has that same player name. Please note, the variable name is not important. It's the value, Rob, that is important. Okay? So you can simply say, the first part, and then the next part, and the next part, and then the next part. And this way, I can play a game with multiple players. Now, what I still need, of course, is something to save stuff in. Oh yeah, as a side note, you could build stuff like this a little bit with Workflow 3. In Workflow 3, they also had correlation. But it would actually be instance correlation. When you create a workflow, you would get a GUID, it would have to send it back to the client, and then the client in each request would have to send that GUID back to the server. So you would always have this technical thing going back and back. If you've ever wondered why the content binding exists, WS HTTP content binding, basic HTTP content binding, it's to pass this number around all the time. Workflow 4 does not require you to do that. The message itself, you can say, there's the data you need to find the instance. Now, next thing I'm going to do is open up this thing, IIS. Now, imagine me deploying the service. I can do that using Dublin, and by the way, is that hard to do? No. What you do here is you go to your project, and you create a deployment package. So that's new in 2010. Anybody who has seen that before, deployment packages? No? This is stuff for ASP.NET 2 and so on, but it allows you to build a WCF service and simply say, I want you to create for me a zip file with all the stuff I want. So you can tell it that you wanted to have it as this kind of zip file. You can actually give it the databases if you want, and then it can actually deploy your databases as well inside that zip file. And then when you build the whole stuff, so when you build this stuff, that's not what I wanted to do, sorry. No. Wrong menu item. When you want to build the deployment package, it will create a zip file somewhere on your disk. And then the cool thing is, if you've installed Dublin, or App Fabric as it's called now, you can go here, and then you can simply say, in this site, I would like to import an application. I'm going to browse to it. So that should be on my documents, Visual Studio 2010, projects, and our number guessing game here somewhere. And then in here, whoops. Did I take the wrong one? No, here. I can just take one of these. So let's take this one. And I can open it up. And I can simply say next. It's going to say I'll deploy all this stuff for you. Next. I think I selected the wrong deploy directory here. Let's try that again. Please be on the right directory. Yes. So I just do open here. Next. Okay. Imagine that this wizard works. It normally works, but I think I have an issue with the naming here. Although normally that also works well. Like I said, I screwed it up. I screwed up IIS. Just as a little side note, I installed Visual Studio Beta 1, then Beta 2, and then Release Candidate. And now if I have the .NET 4 application pool, it takes the wrong version of .NET. But I've deinstalled 4.0.2, and now I have 4.0.3. Beta 2 versus RC. And now this application pool doesn't want to start anymore. And I've been messing about in IIS, and I fixed it, and then something else didn't work anymore, and then I put it back, and now something else doesn't work anymore, so repave soon. That's what the holidays are for. So I have this number guessing game here, and I can actually use this one. Now, please note, there's something special here. If you install Dublin, and this is Dublin Beta 2, if you want to install Dublin, make sure you have the right version of Dublin for the right beta or release candidate version. But what I can do here is I can configure this service now, and I can change a whole bunch of things. I can, for example, say that I want it to persist automatically for me, and I just take this one, and it will persist for me to a database which was installed by Dublin, by App Fabric. I can also give the host management, so I can tell it, for example, to automatically persist, or I can actually stop services if I don't want to. I can make it auto-start my services. That's a cool feature which is also available to ASP.NET. If you have a website and you want it to start immediately when you boot a machine, you can just make it auto-start now. And so on and so on. And I can monitor my stuff. Now what I can do is I can go back here, go to content, use the browser. I just want to get the address here. And then use my tool again to play a game. And by the way, as you can see here, this one actually has two endpoints because I'm using the default endpoints again, and I've enabled two bindings, HTTP and NetPipe. So I can play this game. For example, let's start with HTTP. So again, a name, Rob. Let's invoke. So it now has created a new game. So next thing I can do is I can do the first guess here. And let's take Rob again. Let's give that 50. And I can invoke it, and it says, okay, too small, try higher. Now, while I'm at it, I'm going to do another guess over another protocol. So I'm going to use Rob again. And it said too small, right? So I could use another endpoint to talk to the same service. Why? Well, each time a request arrives, it's going to look up the name, it's going to load all the data out of the database, it's going to execute my code, save it back to the database, and continue. So it said too small, let's try 75. Too large, try smaller. What I can also do here is I can start another game. Jan. Hit invoke. Jan, now try guessing another thing here. So let's create this one for Jan. Jan, 50. Invoke, too large, try smaller. 25, try smaller. Okay, now let's do something really dangerous. Ah yes, reset. Don't forget, my service is running in IIS. I'm just killing IIS. IIS will come back up. I hope so. I'm not afraid. I've tried this before, I think. Come on. Now, what it's actually saying is service stop. Everybody stop. Yeah, everybody happy. Everybody okay. I'll stop now. That's also part of Dublin. So IIS is back up, so I can say, Jan, too large, try smaller, 12. It's waiting for IIS. IIS is doing stuff, I hope. Let's go for Rob, 2. 62, let's try this one, come on. It's still waiting for the other one. Come on, IIS. Oh. Maybe I was just impatient. Let's try again. Ooh. Ouch. Do I have IIS? Well, I don't really have to reconnect here. I could try. No, that's another thing which... by the way, here, there was the demo on the... which I kind of forgot here. Come on, let's try one more. Rob. Okay, I'm not going to say that out loud. Normally this works. I've tried it before. Okay, so this is actually a cool way to deploy stuff. By the way, you might say, okay, Peter, that's all very nice, but what I can do here is I can go back here to Dublin, double-click on this, and I get this dashboard thing. It's actually saying all the services which worked or didn't work, you can look at them here. So, for example, I see there's one service here being idle. There's one service waiting for something. I can see here that there are a bunch of services that have been activated, and it's actually from this thing. And I see there are like three instances that have been activated, so I can click on that. And now I can see what's going on. And I see that this one is complete, and this one was from yesterday, and these two are still in progress. So I somehow lost some connection with those. So what I could actually try to do here is to go back. Recent, this one. This is going to be cool if this one works. Let's do a guess. It should work. So let's try Rob again. 66. Can you imagine this? I just typed in 66 and I even guessed it, but it's still working. I think just now I was just impatient. My little portable just was starting IIS, and I was already hitting it, and nobody was home. So my fault. So cool. So if I refresh this thing, and I have two ready. See? And then if I want to see what's going on here, what I can also do is I can go here to the details, And then I can see which workflow is running and so on and so on. And I can also go here and say, okay, show me the events that have been tracked. So show me what you've been doing, little workflow. And I can also do this with WCF services. So here you can see everything has been doing. Start a new game. Yeah, you have to read from bottom to top. Start a new game, assign stuff, send reply, wait for a guess, do some stuff, and so on and so on. So if I make my workflow a little bit cleanerly named, I can actually see each thing happening one by one. This is a little bit like BizTalk. Okay. Enough about App Fabric. I have like 5 more minutes left, which allows me to show you this one thing. If you're interested now in Workflow 4, I created a little blog post. I posted this one today. And this is a little hands-on lab where you can build your own little guess it game with Workflow 4. And then just run it and play with it. And then soon after that, I'll show you how to deploy it in App Fabric. But that's really easy. Okay? So I think I'm ready. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice trip home. Or maybe a nice party this evening. There's Geek Night, I think. So I should actually tell you to stay for Geek Night. So thank you very much.